MSW Media. Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Thursday, August 26, 2021. Today, the Kraken and her strike force have been sanctioned in Michigan and have been referred for suspension or disbarment. The Select Committee on the Insurrection issues a sweeping request for records and communications leading up to and during the attack on the Capitol. Matt Gaetz failed to report his dismal book sales violating House ethics rules. Two lawmakers make an unscheduled trip to Kabul, and Roundsburg takes a plea deal in South Dakota and gets away with murder. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana. Wow. Big breaking, late breaking news.
My goodness.
Run around and redo the whole script. And so the Roundsburg story has been pulled from the main news block. So I'm going to give it to you real quick right now. He's taken a plea deal for a misdemeanor. He is the guy in South Dakota who hit and run, murdered, vehicular manslaughter, a guy on the side of the road. They found his glasses, remember? I remember.
It was creepy as hell.
Yeah, so he's taken a misdemeanor plea deal.
Bullshit?
Yeah, that's total bullshit. That other system of justice we talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't exist for certain people of a particular skin tone. So there's really not much more to that story. If anything else comes out on it, we will definitely keep you apprised of it. It's just awful. We had to replace it with the big news that the Kraken lawyers in the Michigan sanctions hearing have been sanctioned, and their punishment is amazing. And I'll go over that a little bit more in detail, but we're going to go into the whole entire 110-page ruling on next week's Cleanup on Aisle 45 pod. That's the show that Andrew Torres and I will be recording live for patrons of that show in D.C. on Monday at 5 p.m.
Oh, that's going to be a good one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. A little bit later on the show, I'm also going to be talking with educator and amazing history teacher Sari Beth Rosenberg. We're going to talk about COVID in schools, mask mandates, and of course, the latest on critical race theory, quote unquote, which has been, you know, a term now usurped by the right to discuss anyone teaching any history that, you know, has anything to
white.
Do yeah. with people of color. So we're going to be discussing the latest update on that later in the show. But dude, oh my gosh. Okay, we have so much news to get to today. So let's hit the hot notes.
Hot notes.
Lead story is hard to pick today, Dana.
I can see why.
There's so much, but I'm going to go with, we'll start with the Select Committee on the Insurrection. They're investigating the insurrection. On Wednesday, they sent a flurry of requests to federal agencies for records related to the attack, including communications from the White House. This is the panel's first step to seek documents on how the United States government handled the chaos of the siege on the legislature. Set up by House Democrats with two anti-Trump GOP members, which I don't think you have to say that. They're just Republicans.
Correct.
The Select Committee is escalating its investigation even as the chamber breaks for a month-long recess. The committee, chaired by, as we know, Rep. Benny Thompson, plans to seek executive branch records related to the attack and its run-up, including communications with and among the White House and executive branch agencies on and before January 6th. This records request is huge. I'll go over a couple things here. They're seeking records relating to attempts to place politically loyal personnel in positions across the government after the election, the planning, the organization in response to January 6th and earlier, and attempts to overturn the rule of law and overturn the 2020 election. One segment of the request notably seeks documents and communications related to the mental stability of Donald Trump or his fitness for office. Remember that whole 25th Amendment thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Its request went to the National Archives and Records Administration, the Justice Department, Department of Defense, the Department of Homeland Security, Department of the Interior, the FBI, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Thompson gave the agencies a 2-week deadline to respond. He's not fucking around. The broad range of this request could make it difficult for them to do so in time, but I don't care. The committee asked the National Archives, for all documents and communications within the White House involving a host of Trump denizens, including Hope Hicks, former National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, Trump Advisor Pete Navarro, Kayleigh McEnany.
Kayleigh McEnany.
Oh, my God. Steve Bannon, Mike Flynn, Melania Trump, all Trump's adult children except for Tiffany. She's off the hook.
It makes me laugh.
Left out of every family reunion. Kimberly Guilfoyle, the best is yet to come, Rudy Giuliani, and Roger Stone. Quote, I think it is unlikely the House Committee witch hunt is going to find any documents or evidence that the FBI couldn't find, Roger Stone told Politico. I say again, any claim, implication, insinuation, or assertion that I either knew about or had anything to do with the events of January 6th, even though I stayed at a hotel and hired a bunch of Proud Boys to guard me, is categorically false, and there's no evidence to the contrary, except all the evidence that is to the contrary. Yes, I did add a few things into his statement. In its request to the Pentagon, the panel specifically asked for all documents and communications concerning possible attempts by Trump to remain in office after January 20th, 2021. They also asked for communications about martial law, the Insurrection Act, and the use of military personnel during last year's election. It also sought communications to, from, and about Kash Patel. That is the former Nunes aide who ascended through the Trump administration's national security ranks and then ended up serving as the acting defense secretary's chief of fucking staff. The Patel request touches on civil unrest, violence, or attacks at the U.S. Capitol, challenging, overturning, or questioning the validity of the election or the counting of the electoral vote on January 6th. It also seeks communications between the Defense Department and Trump on January 5th and January 6th, as well as communications about the 25th Amendment. Oh, hey. So that has to do with all the Chris Miller stuff and why the National Guard didn't go out on time. For Department of Homeland Security, they requested materials relating to instructions to stop or delay preparations for the transition of administrations. The committee also asked for materials related to DHS's monitoring of social media and the ousting of Chris Krebs, who ran the department's cybersecurity agency until Trump fired him for defending the integrity of the election. The panel also sent a broad request to the DNI, seeking communications relating to actual or attempted conversations between any ODNI official and any White House official on January 5th and January 6th, 2021. A request to the Interior seeks all documents and communications relating to National Park Service permits and permit applications for events in Washington, D.C. relating to the 2020 election.
I'm sorry, AG, at this point, it's like, we're requesting all documents that have ever been documented. If you get anything that has writing on it and is a piece of paper, or that has print on it and is a piece of paper, we're requesting it.
Yeah, and this is all the stuff for the Interior between Election Day and Inauguration Day. That's not just the 5th and 6th. That's November, December, January. The permitting process for the rally held outside the White House on January 6th has drawn scrutiny because of the ties between Trump campaign officials and the event. It also asked for documents or communications related to conversations between any Department of the Interior official and President Trump or any White House official January 5th or 6th relating to the January 5th rally, the January 6th rally, or the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The Park Police came under attack during the insurrection as well as the Washington Monument. They requested wide-ranging tranche of records from the Department of Justice related to Trump's attempts to force the department to intervene in the election, then-Vice President Mike Pence's role in presiding over the election certification, and any discussion, again, of the 25th Amendment and the department's response to January 6th. They were really driving home this 25th Amendment thing. In particular, they're asking for records on any potential or actual changes in senior personnel in the period between the election and Inauguration Day and investigations of voter fraud. All documents and communications involving Mark Meadows, Kurt Olson, Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, Jenna Ellis, Joseph DeGeneva, and Victoria Tonesing, both on my fantasy indictment draft, and communications between any Department of Justice official and President Trump or any other White House official on January 5th and 6th. Now, from what they want from the FBI is their preparation for the attack and intelligence gathering and communications with the Trump White House. And it also is asking for records related to election investigations and communications with individuals, including Rudy, Sidney Powell, and other supporters of Trump to push to overturn the election.
So, and if you're wondering what that noise is in the distance, it's the sound of 1,000 paper shredders.
Well, fortunately, all these agencies now are Biden agencies now.
Yep, so, absolutely.
The paper shredder sounds would have happened before January 20th.
Oh, my God. Well, the FBI, I don't know. I'd like to think that's clean. We'll find out. Thank you for that unbelievable amount of requests there.
Yeah, I'm sorry it took so long. There was just that there was no way to shorten that story.
No, I would have been disappointed had you. I think our listeners would have been too, because there's so much in there that's just delicious. This is also good stuff. Two members of Congress are facing condemnation and questions following their surprise visit to Afghanistan this week, which diverted resources from the U.S.'s chaotic withdrawal, enraged military leaders, and led House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to declare it not a good idea. So we've got Rep. Seth Moulton, he's a Democrat from Massachusetts, and Rep. Peter Major, a Republican from Michigan. They flew on a charter aircraft and were on the ground at the Kabul airport for several hours Tuesday before flying out on a military plane. They billed their, quote, secret visit as an effort to conduct congressional oversight of the Biden administration's handling of a rapidly deteriorating situation after the Taliban's lightning-fast takeover of the country. Now, it stunned the State Department and U.S. military personnel. Their trip over there did. They said the resources needed to protect the congressman detracted from the evacuation effort and raised the possibility that the lawmaker's flight out could have deprived seats to other Americans and Afghans looking to flee the country before President Biden's August 31st deadline for withdrawal. So Pelosi commented saying, "This is deadly serious. We do not want members to go. It was not, in my view, a good idea." Now, striking a rare note of agreement, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy echoed Pelosi, saying his message to the other lawmakers who wanted to visit Afghanistan is not to go. It makes total sense. They don't want people flying over there right now. We're trying to get everyone out.
I love that you say that. Striking a rare note of agreement, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. That's how we should just say it from now on.
Minority.
Awesome. Well, that's not awesome. They shouldn't have gone. They took seats from people who are trying to be evacuated. And, you know, like you said, they had to give them security, which took away from the evacuation effort. Like, fucking don't do it. But let's shift here because I have a double dose of Schadenfreude for you today. Schadenfreude. All right. First up, I tried to shorten this one too, Dana. But I couldn't. Remember the sanctions hearing in Michigan?
Oh, yes. Oh, Sydney, bring this on.
Sidney Powell, Lynn Wood, Klein Hendler, Holler, and the rest of the Kraken attorneys for their bullshit election lawsuit in Detroit, right? Well, the judge is back with a decision. Quote, I'm just going to read you the intro here. This is 110 pages. Remember, this is just the first two paragraphs. Quote, the lawsuit represents a historic and profound abuse of the judicial process. It is one thing to take on the charge of vindicating rights associated with an allegedly fraudulent election. It's another to take on the charge of deceiving a federal court and the American people into believing that rights were infringed without regard to whether any laws or rights were in fact violated. That is what happened here. Individuals may have a right within certain bounds to disseminate allegations of fraud unsupported by law or fact in the public sphere, but attorneys cannot exploit their privilege and access to the judicial process to do the same. And when an attorney has done so, sanctions are in order. Yeah. So now we do what I always do when I get a court filing. I scroll all the way to the end.
Yes.
And she says, in summary, the court concludes that the plaintiff's counsel filed this lawsuit in bad faith and for improper purpose. Further, they presented pleadings that, one, were not warranted by existing law or by a non-frivolous argument for the extending, modifying, or reversing existing law or establishing new law. And two, contained factual contentions lacking evidentiary support or likely to have evidentiary support. Finally, by failing to voluntarily dismiss the lawsuit on the date plaintiff's counsel acknowledged it would be moot and thereby necessitating the filing of motions to dismiss, plaintiff's attorneys unreasonably and vexatiously multiplied the proceedings. For these reasons, and not for any conduct that occurred on appeal, the court holds that sanctions against the plaintiff's counsel are warranted under Rule 11 and 1927, Section 1927, and the court's inherent authority. Further, this lawsuit should have never been filed. The state defendants and intervener defendants should never have had to defend it. If plaintiff's attorneys are not ordered to reimburse the state's defendants and the city for the reasonable fees and costs incurred to defend this action, counsel will not be deterred from continuing to abuse the judicial system to publicize their narrative. Moreover, this court has found the plaintiff's counsel initiated this litigation for an improper purpose, rendering this the unusual circumstance in which awarding attorney's fees is warranted, so they have to pay money. Further, given the deficiencies in the pleadings, which claim violations of Michigan election law without a thorough understanding of what the law requires, and the number of failed election challenge lawsuits that plaintiffs' attorneys have filed, the court concludes that the sanctions imposed should include mandatory continuing legal education in the subjects of pleading standards and election law.
Bitch, you need to go back to school.
Exactly. Lastly, the conduct of the plaintiff's counsel, which also constituted a violation of the Michigan Rules of Professional Conduct, see, for example, MRPC 3.1 and 3.3, that calls into question their fitness to practice law. This warrants a referral for investigation and possible suspension or disbarment to the appropriate disciplinary authority for every state bar and federal court in which each attorney is admitted.
And I guarantee each attorney had to look up what the fuck MRPC 3.1 and 3.3 were.
Yeah. So they have to go to school. They have to pay money. They are sanctioned. They have to pay attorney's fees. And now they're being, all of them are being referred for suspension or disbarment. Sidney Powell in Texas, Linwood in Georgia, Emily Newman in Virginia, Julia Holler in the District of Columbia, Maryland, New York, and New Jersey, Brandon Johnson in D.C., New York, and Nevada, Scott Hagerstrom in Michigan, and Howard Kleinhandler in New York and New Jersey, and Gregory Roll in Michigan, and then Stephanie Lynn Gentilla in Michigan. So again, 110-page ruling, all kinds of incredible details, including stuff like Linwood is not credible. And I mean, we're going to go over this in detail on the Cleanup on Aisle 45 show. We're recording it for our patrons. If you want to become a patron, patreon.com/aisle45pod. That's 5 p.m. on Monday in D.C. The location will be given to all patrons of that show. But we are going to break that whole 110-page thing down. It's amazing, Dana.
And you become a patron if you're in the D.C. area and you can make this. Do it just to go to this recording. Are you kidding me? I would. All right, AG, and amid a Justice Department's investigation into alleged sex crimes and a related House ethics probe, beleaguered congressman, I don't know who uses that word or why, but we're going to use it here, Rep. Matt Gaetz, appears to have committed at least one much smaller but more straightforward federal violation. His failure to disclose how much money he made from a book he published last September. Now, I know this seems like a stupid story because he's a stupid man. When the Daily Beast inquired about the omission last week, a Gaetz spokesperson said the office needed, quote, additional documentation from the publisher and was in process of receiving that information and amending the congressman's financial disclosure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they were. Sure enough, an amended financial disclosure was filed 3 days after the Daily Beast reached out asking about the undisclosed book income. So, yes, Gaetz's book, which is called Firebrand, went on pre-sale last August and hit bookshelves and online stores in September. Now, after last year's financial disclosure deadline, that was after the deadline, the new amended disclosure claims that the beleaguered, stop it, who's ever writing this, stop it, the beleaguered Florida conservative earned exactly $25,000 from book sales last year. Now, after giving 30% of his personal profits to his agent, Sergio Gore, a former staffer for Senator Rand Paul, who also officiated and DJed at Gaetz' surprise wedding last weekend. If you didn't follow that, this guy, he had to give 30% of his profits to his agent, who was a former staffer for Ron Paul and also officiated and DJed at Gaetz' surprise wedding last week, which was held so that he could hide his assets and his wife wouldn't have to testify against him in anything that happens here on forward. Okay. Now, if Gaetz' $25,000 claim in publishing terms are accurate, the disclosure indicates Firebrand didn't exactly burn up the charts. His reported profits suggested the memoir brought in a total of only about $59,500 between August and December, netting his contracted publisher, Post Hill Press, a little less than $15,000.
Post Hill Press, Firebrand, things I've never heard of. And by the way, who writes a book when your base doesn't read?
Apparently all of them, which I don't really understand, which is why like Ted Cruz and Gaetz and Junior have to pay lots of money to buy their own books. Okay. Hardcover copies were originally listed for $27. New ones now go for less than $10. Apparently they're on sale, AG. And you can still pick up an ebook for $14.99. Now, to match his disclosure, a $27 price tag would come out to about 2,200 units sold. 2,200 books. But even at the, I listen, people, if I wrote a book tomorrow, I would sell more than 2,200 books. But even at the low end, AG, like $10, let's say $10 a pop, Gates would have sold fewer than 6,000 copies of Firebrand across several months. 6,000 copies. Do you know how big his base is? And even they were like, fuck that.
They don't read. They're not readers. My, yeah, I love that it started at 27 and now it's less than 10. It reminds me of the, you know, in what's the Hula Hoop movie? The Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh.
Where they're like, the price keeps going down, 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 down. Crossed out with red. 99 cents.
Oh my God. We're just going to give these away. Anyone want a book? No one want a book? Okay. Take one, leave one? Nope. Okay.
And I have to wonder how many of those 6,000 copies he bought himself.
Oh, I would say 5,963.
Oh my God, 37 sold. Awesome. Good job, Matt Gaetz.
Oh my goodness.
All right, we'll be right back with Sari Beth Rosenberg. Stay with us. After these messages, we'll be right
back. Hey everybody, it's Allison for the Daily Beans, and this year, you know, I'm focusing on health, trying to eat better, trying to take more supplements, and this starts with breakfast, right? But a healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. That is why I love Magic Spoon. It's perfect for me because it has amazing flavors I love, the ones from my childhood, but without all the chemicals and sugar. Magic Spoon is the rarest thing ever. It's a unicorn. It's so good for you, and it's also delicious. It has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, 4 net grams of carbs, and only 140 calories per serving. It is keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. And you can build your own box or get a variety pack with available flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, and cinnamon. And Magic Spoon is bringing back two popular flavors, cookies and cream and maple waffle. Oh, I love the maple waffle. It's so good. When these flavors were first introduced for a limited time, they sold out very fast. So make sure you get these. They're delicious and indulgent. I love the great new flavors. Combining them is good, too. If you mix cocoa with peanut butter, it tastes like a peanut butter cup. So go to magicspoon.com/dailybeans to grab your delicious cereal and try it today. And be sure to use promo code DAILYBEANS, all one word, at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it has a 100% happiness guarantee. And so if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. But you will love it. It is seriously so amazingly delicious. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/dailybeans and use code DAILYBEANS to save $5 off. And thanks to Magic Spoon for sponsoring the episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It is time to bring back my friend, teacher, U.S. history teacher. She's been teaching New York City Public High School for nearly 2 decades. She hosts the PBS NewsHour Extra Teacher Zoom series. She's been featured in New York Times, Washington Post, Reuters, The Progressive, A&E, Lifetime, Travel Channel, everywhere, pretty much. And of course, the PBS NewsHour. Please welcome Sari Beth Rosenberg. Hey, Sari, how's it going?
Great, Allison. It's so great to be here with you today.
Yeah, I'm glad to talk to you again. And the reason that I wanted to bring you on today is, first of all, I wanted a CRT update, but I also wanted to talk about some sinister shit going on from the same group that complains about that, which is the fact that now, you know, we have states with Republican legislatures or Republican governors who are refusing to allow schools to have mask mandates. A lot of the schools are, and a lot of the counties and the districts are bucking those mandates. And now we've got a full-on authorization for Pfizer, which can help a lot in a lot of these districts. And sort of an update on that. I mean, I'm hearing so many really sad anecdotes, but specifically I was thinking of a teacher who wore her mask to school, but there was no mask mandate. And she couldn't get vaccinated because of leukemia, and she recently passed away. And that's in Florida. And a lot of stuff is happening in Hillsborough County and with a lot of those school districts with Ron DeSantis. So I was just wondering what you're seeing. I know New York Public Schools are making some changes now with Hochul in charge. What is your feeling about this? And I mean, it's just such a big mess.
It's a big mess. And so because of the educator series that I've been hosting for a year plus, I have a big network of teachers across the country, and I've been touching base with them as they've been returning to school down the south, southeast. And it's a resounding, basically, where we feel just as stressed and scared, if not more scared and stressed, than we did a year ago. Because now first of all, it's frustrating because we know what can be done to protect the community, to protect the kids, the teachers, the school staff, and then their parents as well. And these regions aren't doing it. And then teachers they're sending me articles about different districts that have had to close school for the day or for the week because there aren't enough teachers or there's too many kids who are sick. And I sound like I'm speaking in hyperbole, but I'm not. I mean, this is what, if anyone's paying attention to the news, this is what's happening. And in New York City, I'm so happy that Hochul basically said mask everywhere in New York State. It's the mandate. I'm really happy that every New York City public school teacher has to at least have one, I wish it was two, but one of the two shots before, I think, September 27th. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some pushback with the UFT. I hope not, though, because that just keeps everyone safe, especially the kids who are 12 and under. And so I would say that I think people are more, teachers, school staff, parents, students, are more scared. I was going to say scared, are more scared than ever because of the Delta variant, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, there's going to be an interview that I've already recorded. It's coming out next week with a mom of school aged children in Florida. Her name is Lori Woodward Garcia. She's heads up Broward for Progress. And she's got this incredible like grassroots group that's really pushing the local school boards to mandate masks despite what's going on at the governor level, you know, where he's just like running around giving everybody Regeneron and
like horse tranquilizers or I don't know, what's the latest fad?
Well, right? Regeneron is great,
yeah.
Actually. It's
Regeneron,
it's a monoclonal
does
thing.
Work. That does
but,
work. Yeah,
but you could prevent the need for it by having vaccines. So, you know, and just the amount of frustration, I can't imagine. You know, I'm in California. I don't have school age children. I'm vaccinated. Everybody I know is vaccinated, and everywhere I go requires vaccines to get in. So I just don't know what it's like, but I mean, they've just got to be pulling their hair out with this and fearing for their lives.
Yeah, they are. Of course, Regeneron is great, but we could have avoided having to recommend that if we could have gotten more people vaccinated so that they wouldn't be getting sick with this new variant of COVID that is even more serious because it's easier to transmit, right? And so it feels like the perfect storm with schools opening. Another thing that teachers are fearing is that teachers were some of the first people, teachers and school staff were some of the first people to get the vaccine. Great. Well, now we're hearing that within 6 to 8 months, the efficacy wears off. We're returning to school now, right? And so I'm glad that there's a push now to get the third vaccine and that's gonna start happening, but it's really frustrating. I vented on Twitter the other day about how I left the school year, which, you know, remotely, saying to the kids, you know, upon the news that I guess was premature on the CDC's part, that said, we're not going to need masks in September. Like, I guess I should have known better, but the kids were so excited about it. And we were talking about how we're going to return to normal-ish and we're going to have pizza parties and meet each other again. And I get really sad thinking about that. Of course, I think it was wishful thinking on everyone's part because we've been through so much. And I was trying to help the kids out and make them feel excited about going back. It's frustrating. We're going to do our best to make it the best year possible, but I can't help but say that I'm very angry at the people who didn't get the vaccine in the time that they were supposed to. And now we're basically making it so that there's going to be, unfortunately, another school year of schools having to close because of kids getting COVID. And teachers and school staff, and we don't even have the remote option in a lot of places now. So it's frustrating.
You know, the amount of vaccine hesitancy, which I'm sorry, we all saw coming last year, a year ago. I mean, I put out a tweet after I think Diamond and Silk were like, I'm not taking any vaccine. And I was like, oh, okay. So what if these Trump people, what if these Trump chuds don't refuse to take, what if they refuse to take the vaccine? And so I think it was a little short-sighted of the CDC to say, you know, we can return to normal in September. And that was before we saw the full impact of the Delta variant. But I don't think that the emergence of the Delta variant was a surprise given the known vaccine hesitancy that we would see. And now there are folks sounding alarm bells saying, if we don't get our shit together and get vaccinated, we could be looking at a new strain that is vaccine avert, that like that, that what's the word, that it doesn't respond to the vaccine at all. And so if anybody next year or in the fall says, oh shit, we didn't see Delta Plus coming, we didn't see Lambda coming. Yes, we do see it coming. And so we need to be very open-minded about going back to remote learning at that point. It's just, I feel a little weird that that people aren't at, you know, people at the highest levels of a government aren't sort of tabletopping these worst case scenarios.
Yeah, because have we not learned anything? I'm going to say this, and this is going to sound maybe extra, as the kids say these days, but I'm wondering if we're going to have lockdowns again if this continues, right? Especially if Delta Plus, when, it's not if, it's when Delta Plus rears its ugly head, how are we going to be sending kids into school, especially if they're under 12, especially if there's no mask mandate, right? So it's kind of like you either have the mask mandate and get everyone vaccinated, or we're not going to be able to have school as we want to have it this year.
But but if there's a vaccine-resistant strain that comes out with an R-naught that is 8.5, like the Delta variant or higher, we can't be around each other at all, masked or not, you know. And so we have to kind of prepare for those eventualities. And I hope at least that, you know, that they are running those tabletops to see what, you know, what would we do in that kind of scenario, because we won't be blind. I'm talking about it, and who the fuck am I? So it's not going to be.
I mean, I'm a history teacher. I don't even know any. I didn't even know what mRNA was about until 6 months ago, right? Or maybe longer. But I didn't know what a HEPA filter was. But we know these things now because it's to save us. But I mean, this is my advice to teachers. I'm going to have my lessons set up so that I could turn them into remote lessons if need be. I think we have to be realistic here. I mean, luckily my school, I think because of the funding that came from the bill, from the money that we got for COVID relief, we have laptops supposedly for every child. So I'm going to be essentially doing I'm going to be live teaching, obviously, but I'm going to set it up so in case the worst case scenario occurs, I can teach remotely.
Yeah. And speaking of lesson plans and curriculum, I want to talk to you a little bit about CRT and something with Kelly Pollack this Saturday, but I do have to take a quick break. Will you stay with me?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. We'll be right back.
Hello, all. It's Allison for The Beans, and this portion of the podcast is brought to you by my favorite sheets ever, Bowl and Branch. Sometimes it's the little things that make the biggest difference, and you know how much I love sleep and how important it is to me. Small gestures of kindness are important, unexpected compliments are awesome, and these seemingly tiny details can leave a lasting impression. And it was the little things that they considered when the husband and wife team started Bowl and Branch, and because it just adds up to this legacy that we leave behind. So let me tell you about this. They created a textile company that cares about the details that would make their products last so they don't end up in landfills and they're sustainable. And you feel a difference in their best-selling, beautifully crafted signature sheets. I am crazy about my Bowl and Branch sheets. They feel so buttery and soft and luxurious. The ultra-refined luxe fabric has the spectacular drape and silken feel, which is truly incredible. The cloud-weight, super-soft sateen weave it gets softer with every wash, and they have the perfect balance of weight and breathability. So they're great in warm weather or cool weather, and they're great if you sleep hot or you sleep cool. And there's no middleman between you and Bowl and Branch, so you get luxury quality for the fairest price. And they stand behind their products and honor a 30-night worry-free guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied, you can just get a refund. To experience an entirely new standard of comfort, visit bowlandbranch.com. You'll get 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code DAILYBEANS, all one word. That's Bowl and Branch, BOLLANDBRANCH
upstart.com and promo code DailyBeans. And today's show is also brought to you by Upstart. If you dread looking at your credit card statements like I do, you aren't alone. So many Americans lived on their credit cards throughout the pandemic. They experienced financial hardship, and debt can feel crippling, and you make the minimum payments and it doesn't go down. But Upstart can help you on your path to financial freedom. Upstart is an online personal loan service that helps you pay off your debt fast. More than 500,000 people have used Upstart to consolidate high interest debt, pay off credit cards, or fund personal expenses with simple fixed monthly payments. Other lenders look at just your credit score, but Upstart knows you're more than a number, so they look at your income and your employment history, which means they can offer smarter rates with their trusted partners. With 1 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. And upon approval of your loan, funds can be available as quickly as one business day. So many of my friends have found themselves in a financial hole over this past year, so I highly recommend checking out Upstart. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/dailybeans. That's upstart.com/dailybeans. And don't forget to use our URL, because that lets them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and other certain information provided in your loan application. So just head to upstart.com/dailybeans to get started today. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're talking with Sarah Beth Rosenberg. And before the break, I alluded to curriculum. And you are my go-to guru on all things critical race theory, which, again, is a graduate level course in law school that is not taught to children. But if you could give us, I just want to make sure I'm not using that term improperly, because it's been weaponized by the people on the right. But if you could give us an update on what's going on with that.
So what's going on with that is, we might not be seeing it in the news as much, but it's still there. It's still there. Just that right now, the same forces that were screaming at school board meetings they don't want their kids learning about CRT, now they're in hysterics about, not, you know, you're making my child wear a mask, and that's not how God wanted my child to be seen, and now you can't see a pretty face. The same hysterics,
right? Said by the lady who wears glasses, right?
Yeah, glasses, yes. Like, God, did God intend you to wear those glasses to read the speech off your phone? I think that was one of my snarky tweets of the week, as was probably many others. But right now, what's going on is, as we speak, about 27 and counting states have introduced measures that ban or make it difficult for school curricula to examine racism in American history. Basically calling it critical race theory, which is not being taught in schools. And they also, of course, this was also triggered by the 1619 Project. So that's something that's being banned by some of these bills. And I believe that 8 states have enacted these measures into law. It could be more right now. And an article just came out in The Nation that I file under not shocking at all, that all of this, this much to do about critical race theory was a product of the Koch brothers and their network. Shocking. It's like, I was waiting for someone to uncover that, right? And we knew that it was coming from there. So basically, this has been, like we said the last time I was on here, this was a means to galvanize everyone in the right-wing camp, whether it be the white supremacists, the corporate elites, right? And to get them all behind essentially stripping away public education, right? And turning, you know, the whole charter school privatization movement. And they're just stoking the fears that exist in a lot of people, unfortunately, and just, they weaponized it. And so even though right now there's a respite, I've yet to see a lot about that. I will say that I don't watch Fox News or OAN. I've yet to kind of see, talk about that on Twitter, but I am sure it'll be back, because it worked, right? The messaging worked. It got people very angry and upset. It's taking a backseat to the mask mandates, but it's scary, and it's something that we can't ignore at all.
Yeah, and I mean, this is straight out of the Koch brothers' playbook, right? To suppress education at all costs, because an educated electorate won't vote for your dumbass.
Exactly.
But this is all connected to the motive behind the insurrection after the release of and now we have the release of the census results that white people are going to become a minority. For the decline, there's a decline in the number of white people in the country for the first time in 200 years. And the insurrection, after a really intense case study was done, showed that, the overwhelming percentage of the people who participated in the insurrection came from blue areas who were afraid of what is being called the Great Replacement, right? And the census numbers bore that out. And that is their biggest fear. And, you know, Sarah, I remember talking about this in college when I was very young and we talked about, look, a point is coming where there's going to be a tipping point in this country where the majority of Americans are not going to be white. And I think that that's going to scare the shit out of white people. And here we are watching it play out in real life. And it's not only affecting our democracy through insurrection and the census numbers, but we're seeing it in the straight up oppression of what we teach in the classroom.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, no one's asking the young people what they think. No one's asking them, are you uncomfortable when your teacher tells you that slavery existed in America? Are you uncomfortable when your teacher explains structural racism to you? I've yet to see one kid at a school board meeting stand up and say, I'm terrified to go to school because they're going to teach me about anti-racism.
It's the opposite.
They want to learn about it. They
you
know
told
about
me.
It.
Yeah, you. Yeah. I mean, you shared that anecdote about the young kid who was like, "Oh my God, I'm not crazy. I'm not alone.
Right?
This happens. Oh wow!" And and for that not alone feeling, it's so important for critical thinking, education. It's like how people do yoga so that they're better at paddleboarding. You teach history so that people can critically think and avoid those scenarios in the future. I mean, it's seems like a no-brainer to you and me, but the xenophobia and the fear that is stoked by the leadership on the right, Koch brothers and big money and government, really just sort of pushes that logic out of the way and allows fear to take over.
And it's so troublesome. And it's also just ignoring the fact that kids are capable of understanding complexity. Because ultimately, this does come from a white supremacist agenda, a fear-based agenda. But at the end of the day, I keep saying this, but my students don't leave my class after learning about structural racism and slavery, hating America. They appreciate America more. They still believe in the ideals of America. America was a place that for a long time celebrated new and the future and forward thinking. It's what we celebrated about ourselves. And in the past couple decades, there's been this real push among a certain camp of people, right, to go backwards. And it's antithetical to what the ideals of America are. And they know that, if they're supposedly, right, if they're so into the study of American history. It's going to backfire. I mean, I know it seems a little grim right now between the pandemic that doesn't seem to be going away and this push, this backlash to teaching the truth, right? But I do, because I am around Gen Z more than your average Gen Xer, unless they're your kids, but I'm around a lot of them and different groups of them every year. They don't want to go back. I mean, right? I mean, I know OK Boomer was offensive to people who were boomers who were not like that. But that phrase comes from that feeling of like, all right, we don't want that. The way you did things isn't working anymore. We want to move forward. And I think that ultimately the new, the young, this mindset that we can all share in the American dream, it doesn't just have to be for white people. We can all share and be better off. Gen Z, for the most part, celebrates that and embraces that and wants that. I just right now though it feels grim. I'm not gonna lie, I don't want to be Pollyannish about it.
No, but that's true for every generation when they were young, right? There was a point when boomers were young and they said the same thing. And then when you and I, when Gen X was young, we said the same thing. Millennials said the same thing when they were that age. Gen Z says the same thing. And the country's been pushed further and further to the left, which is excellent. I mean, it's just taking a very long time. So I think it's important to recognize that at some point, every generation was young at one point,
right,
and had the same sentiment. But what's great is people are doing things about this. I know our friend, Kelly Pollock, host of Two Broads Talking Politics, has started a new podcast called Unsung History. I'll be talking with her about that next week. But you have an event with her coming up on Saturday. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So just to address the anti-history laws, anti-history bills that are being passed, the Zinn Education Project called for, I believe it starts today or tomorrow, days of action just about teaching the truth and the importance of history teachers taking it upon themselves to not let these state preemption laws prevent us from teaching the truth about American history. So we're doing something called the hashtag Teach Truth webinar. And Kelly is going to be moderating. I'm going to be on the panel with Dr. Candace Cunningham. She's an assistant professor of history at Florida Atlantic University. Dr. Yehuru Williams is going to be on the panel. He's the founding director of the Racial Justice Initiative and out of the University of St. Thomas. And you might see him, he's on History Channel a lot. And then we also have Dr. Hassan Jeffries on the panel. He's an assistant associate professor of history at the Ohio State University. And it's going to be an incredible panel. And we're going to give the context of these laws. And we're also going to talk about ways that teachers in the states that have these laws that say they can't teach about anti-racism, they have some tricks up their sleeves about how to do it without, you know, breaking the law, which is so crazy to think that in 2021, when I went into history teach, I went from working in media to being a history teacher. And I thought that was the opposite of being rebellious. And suddenly I'm a big rebel because I teach the truth about American history. Who knew, right? Mm. So that's what we're gonna be doing on Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I guess if you go to twobroads.xyz/teachtruth, you can tune in at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday, 8:28.
Awesome, that is gonna be great. That's an incredible panel, really, really, the credentials of and experience of everybody that's on that panel is amazing. And I know Kelly's going to do an incredible job curating that discussion because it needs to happen. And I hope that you have more in the future. And it's been really great connecting with you today. Can you just remind everybody where they can follow you on Twitter to get updates on this event and more in the future?
Absolutely. And once again, thank you so much for having me on the show again. I love talking to you about all these topics. So you can follow me at Sari Beth Rose on Twitter and Instagram. I'm trying to build up my Instagram. A lot of it is now my tweets, but you know. And my website, if you want to see just links to our recent PBS NewsHour Extra Educator Zooms, is saribeth.com. So at Sari Beth Rose, saribeth.com. And I post a lot because, you know, the angrier I get, the more I post. That's how it goes, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know the feeling. But thank you very much, PBS NewsHour Extra Teacher Zoom Series host and educator, Sari Beth Rosenberg. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
Everybody stick around. We'll be right back with the good news.
Hey Beans listeners, it's AG. Mass-produced products today are primarily geared towards being quick and cheap to produce. They end up in landfills. Quality is not a priority. It's not sustainable. But our sponsor today, American Giant, has set out to bring the best craftsmanship and attention to detail back to the marketplace. American Giant's founder and CEO, Bayard Winthrop, was determined to make the best t-shirt possible because he wasn't satisfied with what was on the market. American Giant's best-selling premium slub tee's iconic silhouette is made in the United States with quality and care. And it's made with custom heavyweight slub fabric that's non-see-through. It's non-torquing, unlike other slub tees on the market today. And American Giant spent over a year obsessing over the fabric they chose. They tested several variations until they found the perfect one. It's made in Los Angeles, California, with 100% American-grown cotton with a rich and varied texture. It's really beautiful. It gives it a unique look, and it holds its shape and color after wash and wear. The premium tee immediately caught my eye because of its comfort and quality. It looks great on, and it keeps looking and feeling just as great even after a bunch of washes. So let American Giant play a supporting role in letting your style shine. American Giant offers the highest quality clothes that feel and look fantastic. Get your new favorite tees at American-Giant.com today and use promo code DAILYBEANS, all one word, for 15% off your first order. That's 15% off when you use code DAILYBEANS at American-Giant.com. And today's show is also brought to you by Canva. As you know, I've had to create a wide range of content for the show before I hired professionals and videos. We did social posts, infographics, web designs, logos, posters. But
it hasn't always been seamless. It took a lot of time, and we were limited by my limited design skills and software. But ever since I discovered Canva Pro, I can design my social media posts like a pro on any device. Canva Pro is a design platform that empowers you to create and share stunning content in just a few clicks. Designing with Canva Pro is easy and fun, no matter what your level of experience is. There are thousands of professionally designed templates you can customize with simple drag and drop tools, or you can start from scratch. It's really user-friendly. And you can add personality and edge to your designs and your posts. It's easy with Canva Pro's endless fonts, photos, and videos. And their extensive library of tools and features and imagery is available in just one subscription. Sharing, creating, and organizing designs as a group has never been easier either, because Canva Pro helps you maintain team projects all in one place, so there's no more lost files or chasing each other for stuff. With Canva Pro's content planner, you save time planning too, creating and posting social media content, because you can like pause your scheduled posts and edit them at any time. It's awesome. My favorite Canva Pro feature, though, is the access to over 75 million photos and 400,000 free templates. I can easily design new logos, posters, web events, infographics, and more. So design like a pro with Canva Pro. Right now, you can get a free 45-day extended trial when you use the promo code. Just go to canva.me/beans to get your first free 45-day extended trial. That's Canva, canva.me/beans. Again, canva.me/beans. You'll be glad you did.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news. Well, we're blown on good news. It's on the way.
As if we needed additional good news today.
Seriously, the whole episode. I hope everyone's feeling really light right now.
Yeah. And but I still absolutely love this part of the show. If you have any good news you want to send in, or anything, pictures, whatever you want to send in, any of the games we're playing, any new games you want to start playing, you can do it at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. First up, from LM, pronouns she and her. Hey, y'all. My in-laws in the UK do not have a cat. My father-in-law isn't really a pets person. The cat from across the street, Theo, doesn't care. He has adopted my in-laws as his daytime home. Theo shows up around 6 a.m. and hangs out all day, frequently as a shoulder void, and then goes home again late in the evening. His owners are perfectly nice people with some nice teens, but apparently Theo prefers the retiree lifestyle.
Oh my goodness.
It's perfect for my in-laws. They don't have to do any of the upkeep of having a cat, but they get all the snuggles. Keep up the great work. I love you both. Look at this kitty.
Oh my God. Look at that animal hater.
Oh my gosh.
That actually looks like a tiny black leopard. That cat.
Oh, it's pretty
so
baby.
Sweet. My goodness. Thank you for kicking us off with that. All right. We have Dee from Iowa. No pronouns given. Hi, Allison, Dana, and Amy. Just a simple thank you. I just want to say how I appreciate your news. I love the in-depth and fact-based analysis from you all and from the guests like David Rothkopf, Len Kirshner, gotta love him, Olivia Troy, and Alexander and Rachel Vindman. Power couple. This is especially important in this time where some media outlets have gone overboard trying to find a Biden scandal. Honest criticism and investigation is one thing, but to write the story before it's over, like they've done with Afghanistan withdrawal, is dishonest and dangerous. Seeing your podcast in my email first thing in the morning is a big boost to my morning workout. Pet tax. Over the last few days, you've had submissions of many Australian shepherds, aka many American shepherds. That was also confusing to me when my daughter got her dog almost 3 years ago. Here's her mini Kirby, paddleboarding and boating this last weekend. Here's my daughter Shadow, and best friend, especially when she was in lockdown. She lives alone, and my goodness, this is an adorable picture of both of them.
In the boat, dog on a boat. Oh, look at the last one.
I know, such happiness and calmness. I love that it's just like, and a foot.
And a foot and a phone.
That really, other than the, this looks like a crime scene. I mean, if that arm was down and she and the dog looking up at the, you know, investigator like, I don't know what happened.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you for your American Shepherd submissions, which I will probably continue to call mini Aussies. Okay, next up from Erica, pronouns she and her. Hey, all, my submission is more in the land of lyric interpretation than the mishearing of. When I was about 4, I was in the backseat of my mom's car and being driven to my sitter's house. Mom was on her way back to work. She had 2 coworkers with her as they all carpooled, and my sitter was on the way. My 4-year-old energy was a bit much for the woman in the back as it was coming up on Christmas, and I was insisting we all sing carols at about 7 a.m. I got decked the halls and eventually to don we all our gay apparel. And I looked at Mrs. Wolf and yelled, "That's our pajamas," in her face as we sang. It took my mom a bit to figure it out, but the last time I made the family sing it, I asked what gay apparel was, and she told it was our nice clothes, and I heard night clothes. And that's pajamas in my head. Still in our family, someone yells out pajamas at the right moment as anybody is singing it. That's amazing. Here is my pet tax, our former girl Tallulah. We inherited her at age 4. As many problems as she had, we wouldn't have traded her for the world. She was always pining for kisses and attention. She always got it. She is over the Rainbow Bridge now and bouncing around without any more pain and waiting for us all there. Thank you for all you do. I have my mom, age 78, and dad, age 72, listening. Awesome, my mom and dad. Both have been aggressive liberals since I was young, and they taught me well. Thanks, guys. Love you all.
Look. Aw, look at this baby.
Oh, look at the teeths. Oh, so adorable. Thank you for that. Yeah, no, I love that. I love when families have a thing now. Pajamas! It's our night clothes. That's funny.
So cute. All right, this next one is... It says Ed, pronounced Ed, so pronouns he, him. Howdy, AG and DG. I'm a recently minted listener, though bummed that I didn't tune in years ago. Looked you up after Twitter feed, had a pic of you in the uniform. We both are NNPS grads. Will you tell people what that is, please?
Naval Nuclear Power School.
Thank you. Weeks later, so many of my favorite people are on your show. It's dumbfounding to have missed so many probably great episodes. In misheard category, was confused last week to learn your show's theme song is Daily Beans, not Jelly Beans.
The show's called Daily Beans, Ed.
Oh my God, I know. Maybe that's why it's Ed. But I'm going to continue to pretend it's the latter. For confession, will admit, back in the 90s, thought people were telling me, you're a real asset, which was confusing when I got sent to charm school. Turns out the actual phrase was, you're a real ass, Ed. My pet tax submission is Scruffy. She's a terrier of the Nerf herder breed. Her favorite job is letting us de-stress by rubbing her belly. Thank you for all you do. And look at that
face.
Oh
my God.
With the teddy bear.
I want to pet that dog so badly.
Oh my goodness.
Well, Ed, thank you for that. And sorry about Power School. It was a pain in the ass. But thank you for your service. And, you know, the episodes are all there if you want to go back and listen to them all the way back to November 1st, 2017, when the shit started to rain down heavy. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, thank you for that submission. Next up is from Amy, pronouns she and her. Hello again, lovely ladies of the beans. I totally don't want to be that person, but Tioga County is pronounced Tioga, rhymes with toga.
Toga County.
Like you're wearing a tioga. Oh, tioga. Okay. Like you're wearing a tie with your toga. That was my husband's suggestion for an explanation. All right. So it wasn't Tioga. It wasn't Tioga. It's Tioga. Tioga County. I think I got it now, Amy. Today you get Sabrina. She is as mean as a snake, but she's beautiful and I love her.
Oh, that describes everyone I've ever dated. exactly. Just kidding. If any of my exes are listening, I'm just kidding.
No,
except three of you. Okay, Sharon. Sharon from Long Island, New York, pronouns she and her. This is a submission for Shit Kids Say. I can't thank you guys enough for helping me keep my sanity over these past few years with Mueller, She Wrote and the Daily Beans. You're an important part of my daily routine. I used to listen to you on my daily commute in the city. On the days I'm working from home, I listen at my desk. I've written to you in the past about my mask-making charity project on the early days of COVID.
Yes.
Today, I want to share one of my favorite stories that is perfect for Shit Kids Say game. When my daughter was a toddler back in the late 1980s, I was lucky enough to get a home computer. One of the software floppies that came with it was a simple program that flashed large color letters and numbers on the screen when you pressed the corresponding key on the keyboard. My little toddler loved to hit the keyboard and asked me, "Was that?" Each time, a colorful image popped up on the screen. By the age of 2, she had learned all her letters and numbers and took great delight in showing off her knowledge at every opportunity. While walking through parking lots, she was just about the right height to read license plates and refused to pass a car without reading the plate. Her readings went something like this. R8G Tom Brokaw 5C1. or HG9, Tom Brokaw, GPY. With every license plate she read, we heard her little voice squeaking out, "Tom Brokaw," in the middle of the reading. My husband and I puzzled over this quite a while until one evening I took a break from preparing dinner to tidy up the den. I usually prepared dinner while listening to the TV playing in the next room. The evening news program was just beginning as I was picking up the numerous toys littering the floor. At the moment, I happened to look up at the TV and the announcer was saying, "With Tom Brokaw," and the image on the screen was a helicopter aerial view of the Statue of Liberty. At that moment, I realized she was saying "Tom Brokaw" in the middle of each license plate reading. At that time, all New York State license plates had the image of the Statue of Liberty in the center between the first and last three digits.
Oh my God.
That's fucking brilliant. I don't have any pets to offer up. You don't need to after this submission. Right. I don't have any pets to offer up for the pet tax, but I will share pictures of my parents' dog, Sherry, who's no longer with us. Whenever the family gathered, Sherry would find herself a comfortable spot among us on the sofa. As you can see by this picture, she was much loved, doted over, and had absolutely no idea she was a dog.
Is that a little Cumberland? Look at the
That belly. Looks like a cocker.
So cute. Okay, but can we talk about what a genius this kid is?
Seriously.
So all the letters, all the numbers by age 2, and then associated the name Tom Brokaw with the Statue of Liberty, and when was reading license plates, said Tom Brokaw when they came across the Statue of Liberty. Holy
R-A-G,
shit.
Tom Brokaw, 5C1.
Holy
RG9.
Shit.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
It's so, I think it's super Pavlovian too, isn't it? Right? Like when you see that, you like the bell. Bing. Well,
that's Tom Brokaw. And I'm also really amazed that you found out how it happened because otherwise it would have been a mystery, right?
That's true.
Oh my God. That's so cool. Thank you for sending that in.
They're like, I don't know, just Tom Brokaw.
Really loves Tom Brokaw.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, I assume every time she saw the Statue of Liberty, that she thought it was called Tom Brokaw.
Oh, my God. Yeah, not even Lady Liberty. The Statue of Liberty's name is Tom Brokaw.
It's Tom Brokaw. Can we go see Tom Brokaw in Ellis Island? He's there.
Oh.
Got the big torch. Anyway, fantastic. I wonder what would happen if she could have seen, like, Ghostbusters 2.
Right. Oh my God.
Tom Brokaw attacking the city. Well, saving the city. Excuse me.
Same. There you go.
Thank you for all your submissions. These are wonderful and amazing. Please continue to send them in at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Tomorrow, I think we're back with Amy Carrero. If you have any disputes you want settled in Amy's court, send them on in. And then, of course, I will be in D.C. over the weekend. We've got several Beans Leguminati meetups. Set up to go, and you'll have all that information if you're, you know, on the Patreon page of the Daily Beans. And then, of course, we have the live recording Monday at 5 of Cleanup on Aisle 45. That's going to be super fun with this 110-page decision that just rips into the crack and strike force. It's amazing. Truly amazing.
Love it.
Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, everyone have a great weekend. Unless something happens with Amy, and God willing it will not, I will be in your ears on Monday.
Yeah, we'll talk to then. Everybody have a good weekend. Until then, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, and take care of your mental health. I've been Allison Gill.
And I've been Dana Goldberg.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg and Amy Carrero. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.